Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for being with us. Florida ranks 49th in the nation in per capita funding for mental health services. According to U.S. Department of Health and Human Services surveys taken between 2011 and 2012, nearly 17% of people in the state experienced the presence of a mental, behavioral, or emotional disorder in a given year. In 2012, the State Department of Children and Families admitted it had not been able to provide services to 170,000 adults and 40,000 children with serious mental illnesses. Despite this, the Florida Senate voted to reduce funding to the mental health services budget by $76 million. We listened back to a conversation this week on WUSF's Florida Matters, hosted by Carson Cooper, about the current state of access to mental health services for uninsured Floridians and the impact on agencies like DCF and law enforcement. Cooper speaks with Barbara Dare, president and CEO of Suncoast Center and chairwoman of the Florida Council for Behavioral Health, Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Galtieri, and CEO of the Central Florida Behavioral Health Network, Linda McKinnon. Let's hear that conversation now.
Former Circuit Judge Belvin Perry of Casey Anthony fame wondered aloud last year whether it would take a mass shooting before Florida decides to make mental health funding a priority. Many will say that act has already taken place, the tragic murder of 5-year-old Phoebe Johnchuk, apparently at the hands of her father. He's been charged with first-degree murder. Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Galtieri, welcome to Florida Matters.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I want to talk more about the Johnchuk case in just a moment. But first, your counterpart in Duval County, Jacksonville Sheriff John Rutherford, says it is time to take the burden off law enforcement and get medical professionals more involved in the care of mentally ill. Do you see that imbalance in Pinellas County or overall around the state?
Absolutely. Pinellas County statewide and nationwide, because the jails have become de facto mental health facilities when they're really not. There's really no treatment and not the right kind of treatment in jails, and jails aren't designed for that. So it's become a huge burden on the jails and the criminal justice system.
Lee County Commissioner Bob Jane said his county's largest mental health hospital is Lee County Jail.
Probably true. You know, so many of the people, we have an average daily population of just under 3,000 people in the Pinellas County Jail every day. And the good majority of them have mental health problems and or substance abuse and alcohol problems, which equate to mental health issues in many respects. So it's just about everybody's touched by it in some fashion that's in that jail.
And usually that first touch comes to law enforcement. They're usually the first people that the mentally ill encounter. And I got to believe your deputies are specially trained to handle mentally ill patients.
Well, it's true that it's usually the first contact is law enforcement when they're in crisis because of the behavior that they engage in. And we try to have as many deputies as we can, CIT or crisis intervention team trained, so they can recognize what that behavior is. And it's not criminal behavior, but it's behavioral or mental health related, and to keep them out of the jail and put them into that behavioral mental health system. That's the goal. You know, law enforcement, I think, in this area and around the state does a decent job, good job, but we can do better, and we need to do better at making sure those people don't go into the criminal justice system when they don't belong there.
Linda McKinnon is the president and CEO of the nonprofit Central Florida Behavioral Health Network. Welcome to Florida Matters.
Thank you.
And your job is what? To make sure that state money is spent wisely?
Yes. Central Florida is one of 7 managing entities across the state of Florida. We were formed by the legislature to assure that funds are used appropriately and that we provide quality services and access to services for persons who have no other means to pay.
Now, how does that money make its way from, I guess it's the DCF at the top, right?
Yes.
How does it make its way down to the local level?
DCF appropriates those dollars through Central Florida's contract. It's about $156 million a year for both substance abuse and mental health treatment and prevention services. In turn, Central Florida contracts with approximately 82 providers across the 14-county area to provide those mental health and substance abuse treatment services.
Now, more than half the money, this is a figure I came across, more than half the money Florida spends on mental health is spent on keeping the mentally ill locked up and not on preventative measures. Is that correct?
That's accurate. And what we know is that it costs about $72,000 for an average length of stay in a state civil mental health hospital, and that's for about a 10-month length of stay. For all those people, and last year we were able to divert about 115 people from the state mental health facilities. And we do that primarily through our FACT teams that are very assertive community treatment teams, hospitals without walls. The cost of keeping someone in the community successfully is about $11,000 for the same period of time. So it's a much better, more effective, and cost-effective way of treating folks.
Barbara Dare is the president and CEO of Suncoast Center in Pinellas County. Welcome to Florida Matters.
Thank you.
So in an ideal world, if the shift were to swing from shift over to prevention rather than keeping the mentally ill locked up, specifically, how would prevention work?
Well, in a perfect world, whenever anyone went to get any kind of health assessment, their annual checkup, they would also have an emotional wellness checkup. And we would there identify any issues and problems, not only with the individual, but maybe with members of their family. So then we could get them into the lowest level, most cost-effective services available, which would be individual therapy and psychiatric assessment and potentially medication. Treatment works. It's very effective. We have lots of cases in which people were diverted from the jail and from the crisis centers. And if they end up in either of those locations, the trauma that happens to them takes for many years for them to recuperate from and costs a lot more.
Now, Sheriff Gualtieri, I think Linda or Barbara could confirm this. I think Florida ranks, what, 49th or 50th, is it? It seems
49th.
To float back and forth in per capita funding for mental health services in the U.S. Now, most Northeast states, I'll look this up, spend six times the amount that Florida does. Is there proof, a direct correlation, that it's mainly a money thing or and not how it's allocated?
Well, I, from my perspective, I think it's both. It certainly is a money thing. There's not enough. And I think that the lack of funding also drives some of the decisions on what's being done or not being done. But I also believe that with anything is that we should also look at the dollars that are being spent and make sure they're being spent properly. So, and most effectively, and in evidence-based, evidence-driven, outcome-driven program. So I think that anytime you're looking at something as massive as this, you need to make sure that it's adequately funded, but you need to make sure that it's rightly funded and it's going to the right people who are going to drive the right outcomes. So it's a combination of both.
Based on what you've seen, what is working in Florida that needs more funding?
Well, as an example, I think the crisis intervention teams overall are working. And that's where law enforcement officers are trained to assess and recognize behaviors being behavioral health or mental health related and not criminal per se. As an example, there's 67 sheriff's offices in the state of Florida. Only about 40 participate in CIT. There's thousands of police departments. Only some participate. So while those that are doing it okay and well in some respects, there's room for more. And the goal should be is to have 100% participation. So that would be an area where we're doing it well, but there's definitely room for improvement. And what does it take to do that? Commitment, but it takes money.
Linda McKinnon, according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and these are from surveys taken in 2011 and 2012, nearly 17% of people in Florida experience the presence of a mental or behavioral or emotional disorder during that given year, 17%. How do you gauge the mental health of a population?
What we can gauge is the number of people that we are able to serve. And as I said, through our communities last year, we served about 120,000 people. That is a tip of the iceberg. Unfortunately, because of the funding restrictions in Florida, beyond being 49th in funding, we're also the third highest state for the uninsured. So we have a huge population of people trying to access services. In our system, pretty much the way in is through either being in crisis and the crisis centers or through police action and the jails. And that's sort of the equivalent of if I had a heart disease, mm-hmm. waiting until I had a massive heart attack to be able to get help. What we would like to do is flip that paradigm to what Barbara was talking about of early assessment, early identification, and dealing with the issues and helping people get back on their feet before they are in crisis or in the jail.
Barbara, there you're nodding your head there. Let's talk about state funding. In 2012, the Department of Children and Families admitted it has not been able to provide services to 170,000 adults and 40,000 children with serious mental illnesses. The Senate voted to reduce funding of the mental health services budget by $76 million. And this is sort of what I asked Sheriff Gualtieri about. Is it the funding? Or are there better ways to spend the money that we have?
Well, without the funding, you cannot provide as many of the better services that you need to provide. So I agree with him. It's really both. We get up to 250 requests for services a week at our organization. We cannot accommodate all of those requests for services. However, we do have some programs that work very effectively. For instance, Linda had mentioned the FACT team, which is a group. We have a psychiatrist, we have an employment specialist, we have a therapist. They go to their homes, they work with these individuals who have been in the hospital and in jail, and they work very closely with them. And I have many examples of individuals. For instance, I have a 37-year-old man who had been in jail multiple times. He had been in psychiatric hospital several times. He had ongoing substance abuse dependency disorders, also serious suicide attempts, including, for instance, trying to shoot himself in the abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
We brought him on our team. We provided services, including long-term injectable medications, which are highly effective. He has had no further jail stays. He has been hospitalized once, but he is doing well. He is no longer using substances. He's living independently, and he actually now is such a positive influence for other patients in the house he lives in. He is running a co-occurring disorder support group. So we have examples of where this treatment really is effective and it really works for mental health and substance abuse services, but it's not free.
Sheriff Gualtieri, it's been reported that nearly two-thirds of the state's mentally ill go untreated. Many do end up behind bars. What specifically are you seeing in jails?
Well, and maybe it's just because of where we sit, but from my view, and I think it's fantastic, the example that Barbara just gave, but I see that as the anomaly, and because what we see more and more is the opposite of that situation, and maybe it's because everything rolls into us. When nobody can get help anywhere else, it comes to us. Where their problems are massive, they come to us. So I see a system where there's need for much more of what Barbara's talking about, and there's a huge void there. Give you an example. A couple weeks ago, we had a woman who came at the deputies with a steak knife and was trying to stab them. Frankly, the deputies under those circumstances, when she raised that knife over her head and was charging at them, would have been justified in using deadly force. Luckily, we had an experienced sergeant there and a CIT-trained deputy, and at their own potential peril, took evasive action, didn't shoot her, were able to disarm her, and they didn't charge her criminally. They took her into custody under the state's Baker Act law, which is an involuntary assessment period. And when she went to the receiving facility, all she did is to see a psychiatrist via Skype. And within 72 hours, she was released. They gave her a prescription. She never got it filled. She's back out on the street. And that's a hole. That's a void. That's a problem within the system. And, you know, the laws are in place where they can go to the court and seek that person to stay in custody longer than that assessment period. But so much of it, from where I see it, is crisis stabilization. But there's that void in long-term care, follow-up, aftercare, the FACT teams to be able to go out. This woman got nothing. Mm-hmm. She easily could have been dead, and the deputies handled it the way it should have been handled. But she didn't get anything out of the system.
Linda McKinnon, there has been a lot of debate over accepting Medicaid dollars from the federal government over Obamacare. Some are calling for the state to accept that money. A former Medicaid official told lawmakers last year that an expansion would move 200,000 mentally ill Floridians from DCF to Medicaid, which would free up millions of dollars for community-based treatment programs. Does that sound to you like a feasible approach? Would that actually work that way?
I believe that if Medicaid were expanded along with the rates that are paid for Medicaid, that would increase our capacity. About 63% of the funds currently that come through DCF are spent on community programs, housing, support programs, wraparound supports, medications that help keep people stable in the community. Medicaid pays for purely physical treatment services, and the population that we serve really requires a lot more than just medications and doctor visits. So it would, in fact, free up those dollars to more successfully wrap around people. However, in Florida, as I said, we also have the third highest number of uninsured. We have a very large undocumented population who will never be eligible for those benefits, and we have to find a better way or continue resourcing the services to those people.
Barbara Dare, Suncoast Center focuses on child abuse, behavioral health, and family stability. Some school superintendents around the state say, like law enforcement, they too ought not be the primary providers of mental health services, but schools do play a very important role in identifying extreme cases and connecting them to mental health resources.
We work very closely with the school system, as many of the providers do in our community and across the state, and actually have therapists in a number of elementary and high schools. And you're right, it is not their job to be providing the mental health services. But again, there's not adequate funding or linkage to those services in order to meet all the needs that are out there in the community.
That's all the time we have for today's show. We've been listening to this week's segment on WUSF's Florida Matters regarding funding for and access to mental health services in Florida. There's more information on today's show and past editions of the program online at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. Continue the conversation on Facebook at WGCU Public Media and on Twitter using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Thanks to my producers Topher Forges, Richard Chinqui, and Luke Martin. This is WGCU, Fort Myers, 90.1 FM, WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.